And this is our second of three oral arguments live here in courtroom 200 at the Judicial Center. Welcome to both counsel. And you'll notice that they did take the covers. You're getting a customary or a complimentary cover that you can have and to cover your microphone and take home with you and do what you wish with it after that. The process otherwise is pretty much the same, except it's a little harder than in the past to see the clock because that's in the middle traditional podium. So make sure to kind of once in a while take a glance to your left or right at that. Otherwise, our process is the same. And I'll note, by the way, the file number I gave the name of the case is 821-1587. And so, counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Anthony Remick, attorney on behalf of plaintiff and appellant Aaron Wesser. I'd like to start a little bit outside the box today. We're going to mention a case that neither party cited in the briefs, and we didn't do this for shock and awe and surprise. It's actually a case that was just came out from the Court of Appeals on February 14th of this year. The case is Elm Creek Court Home Association versus State Farm. The site for it is 2022 WL433227, and I bring this case up because it also discusses pre-award interest. The court determined that in this case that State Farm is entitled to an offset for payments made prior to an appraisal award. So for example, if the appraisal award comes out at $300,000, similar to this case, if State Farm has already paid $200,000 on the loss, they only owe the interest on that gap of $100,000 from the time of the first written notice to the time of the appraisal award. And I bring this up in particular because this kind of mirrors exactly what State Farm's policy actually says. State Farm's policy says that it does not owe interest on the loss until the loss becomes payable. And as we've pointed out in our briefs, we believe that the loss is distinguishable from the actual appraisal award. So as the Wesser case goes on, if Wesser presents his case to State Farm, and State Farm says, okay, you've had a fire loss, we'll give you $100,000 for it. They pay that $100,000 on the loss. If that takes 6 months to make that payment, Wesser can't say, okay, well, now you owe me interest on that $100,000 payment. Nope, State Farm doesn't owe interest on the loss. Goes further on, as it gets closer to appraisal, State Farm says, okay, we understand that you dispute this loss. We're gonna pay you up to $200,000 for this loss. Wesser says it's actually $330,000, so there's a dispute there still, but State Farm pays up to about $200,000 on this loss. Again, still no interest, they've made payments on the loss. It's when Wesser has to say, okay, State Farm's not paying anything more on this loss. The only way I can get the true value of this loss is to go to appraisal, and appraisal says this loss is $300,000. So State Farm has improperly withheld $100,000 of payment from Wesser, and that he had to go get the appraisal award to get. That appraisal award now gives him the right to say, State Farm, you have to pay me up to this $300,000 number. And along with that, there are other rights too, and that's pre-award interest. The policy does not prevent pre-award interest. Paler similarly says, absent an express exclusion of pre-award interest, the policyholder gets it. And again, the terms that State Farm chose to use in their policy does not explicitly preclude pre-award interest.
So I may have missed some of the facts that you just argued, Mr. Remick, and I apologize for that. But as you noted, you're making an argument that's now different from what you presented in your brief. So I just want to go back over it just slightly. So some of it seems tied to the policy, and that you're, because we are being asked to interpret the State Farm policy here. And it goes to your understanding of the words, the loss, and I'll return to that in a bit. But as to what pre-award interest would be owed on, and you're describing a scenario where, which is a little different, but similar to what happened in your case, where State Farm makes a series of payments. In this case, they made the series of payments up to the point where they paid what they deemed to be fair market value for this fire loss. And then, as you noted, there was a dispute on what the total recovery would be under this policy. Mr. Wesser initiated that dispute and said, I'm entitled to an appraisal award, and he got it, all right? As to replacement value, he got more than what State Farm suggested or believed that they were obligated to pay. Correct. So Here's my question. I think it's fairly simple. Where State Farm has made a series of payments like that, are you or is Mr. Wesser entitled to pre-award interest on those initial payments going back to the date when notice was given, which is what our statute talks about for pre-award interest?
And so that's what I think the Elm Creek case did address. The Elm Creek case says that State Farm does get an offset for that, so it does subtract those.
But what's the offset? That's what I'm trying.
Oh, yeah.
So those initial payments, however many, there were no pre-award interest at all?
Correct. That's what Elm Creek sorted out for us here in the first-party insurance claims world. Before that, it was debatable, and when this case was coming up, that was very much part of the debate, mm-hmm. was would Wesser get interest on the full $300,000 award or just the unpaid balance of that award?
So you're really addressing, I think, the argument that State Farm makes forcefully in their brief, which is that you're not looking for a double dip here or a windfall.
Exactly. And that's what I really wanted to clarify here.
And because your argument time is going really quickly, I just want to make sure we get to the interpretation question, because the windfall argument is separate and apart from an interpretation issue. So you know the policy language I want you to focus on. So it's no interest accrues on the loss until after the loss becomes payable.
Exactly.
So is that language ambiguous or unambiguous?
It is unambiguous. The loss itself means the loss payments. And my argument is that that is different than a payment on the appraisal award.
So I struggle with that answer because I don't see that definition in the policy at all.
There's not a definition for it.
So give me your reasoning, because I that is not the common understanding of the phrase the loss. So where would you get that from the State Farm policy? And you definitely did not make that argument in your brief.
I mean, just as the common terms of what a loss is and what a loss means, when you're an insured and damage happens to your property, that is considered a loss. And then State Farm, ideally, they come out and they say, okay, you need a new roof. It's $40,000. You know, this takes time. It usually takes, 2 months for a non-disputed claim. They come out and they'll make payment, $40,000. Hey, I say that's enough to get my roof done. That's a payment on the loss. And so the crux of the argument is where this changes from just a payment on the loss is when State Farm says, we will not pay you that amount of money. We won't pay you that. And then same with like a personal injury claim, for example, right? If I have a claim for personal injury, I can say, you injured my leg and I had to go to the hospital. It costs $50,000. There's no interest on that until if I sue somebody and I go get a judgment, there is interest on the judgment that I get. So it changes from just being a normal loss.
Right.
That
State Farm would completely issue. Understand the difference between pre-award interest and interest on a judgment. Our statute's pretty clear on that. So just focusing on pre-award, because I think that is solely State Farm's focus and the district court's, the linchpin of the district court's decision. So I'm still struggling with, in this policy, mm-hmm. interpreting it. You know how we interpret policies, right?
Yes.
So we look at the language in the policy. We can read it in context. We look at the words. The word the loss in this policy means a number of things. And you argue some of them in your brief, although I don't hear you doing that today, one of which is the word the loss refers to things like the event of loss, mm-hmm. here the protected loss. So that's the fire, right? I mean, that's one meaning of the word the loss.
Well, sure.
But, yep.
But even as in Paylor, so Paylor set the tone that says on an insurance policy, if you have to go and get an appraisal award, you get pre-award interest. So that's the standard, and that's the way that things were until State Farm wrote this, what they claim to be an
exclusion. So I disagree with your view of Paylor for a couple of reasons. First of all, Paylor did not, the policy in Paylor, the Cincinnati policy, didn't have language, anything like this language.
Correct. It is
so
different.
It doesn't guide us in the interpretation of this language.
Right, and I just wanted to start from the top to say that, a policy that doesn't have this line in it surely does allow pre-award interest. So as Paylor said, pre-award interest is the standard. So unless it's explicitly excluded, unless pre-award interest is specifically excluded from the policy, and that's why I think the language that State Farm uses and says specifically excludes pre-award interest doesn't actually mention pre-award interest. It doesn't say pre-award interest. It says interest on the loss, which, as you've stated, can mean a couple of different things. It can mean the fire. It can mean the actual payments for that loss. But my point is really...
Well, I'm still struggling with where what support you have for payments on the loss. Because the other definitions I see in State Farm's policy for the loss are, if you say that it's the amount of loss, they define two different types of amounts of loss in their policy. They have the replacement cost, and they have the cost of repair. Your client could settle for repair costs with State Farm, could have, but you didn't. You know, your client went ahead and asked for replacement costs, which you're entitled to under State Farm's policies if your client actually does the repairs, right? I understand the policy, I think.
Correct, yes,
yeah.
But State Farm's value of the replacement cost value. So there's no dispute that my client was going to get the replacement cost value when he makes the repairs.
Right.
The thing is, State Farm said that that value is around $230,000, whereas my client says that that value is actually $330,000. The appraisal award says it's $300,000. So there was no dispute that they were going to get the replacement cost value in this claim. The dispute is, how much is the claim? And so State Farm's alleged exclusion is in their loss payment provision. It says exactly how and when they're going to pay the loss. It says 5 days after either there's an agreement or there's an appraisal award, that's when the loss becomes payable. And so when they're talking about the loss, they're talking about payments on the loss, because that's exactly where it is in the policy.
Mr. Emick, and I wasn't quite satisfied either with our understanding, maybe, of your answer to Judge Braffel's question on this award versus loss. It seems fairly typical that are not unusual in the civil arena that parties might dispute the value of the amount of loss. Mm-hmm. And so an award, if it's not based on a loss, what is it based on? How would those be distinguished?
Yeah, it is based on a loss to start. And it's particularly State Farm's failure to pay that loss. That's when it has to go and become an appraisal award. And so the argument is that's where there's a difference. That attaining that appraisal award gives the insured different rights. It gives them the right to say, look, State Farm, you failed to pay it. You owe this appraisal award. And along with it, you owe pre-award interest. It's different than just a payment on the loss. Same as with any other type of litigation, like I said, a personal injury or something, they would owe this certain amount. If they just pay the claim, exactly what they say is owed, then at that point they cannot say that there's interest on it, right? If Wester says you owe $300,000 total for this loss, and State Farm says, okay, we pay you that, there is no claim for interest. They cannot get any more. It's when State Farm fails to pay it, and the insured has to go and obtain this appraisal award, it provides them a different set of rights. And there is a difference between the loss and the appraisal award, and that's why a careful reading of Paler shows that they were very particular to talk about pre-award interest. It doesn't say interest on the loss, because it is something different. Payment on the loss...
Just to follow up on that, then, under the provision that we're all kind of focusing on, no interest accrues on the loss until after the loss becomes payable, and then it has the appraisal award at C listed. The judge apparently agreed with you, it was unambiguous, but unambiguously read that to mean exactly what it means. The award was made, they paid within the 5 days, I believe it is, under the policy, therefore no pre-award interest. Mm-hmm. Why was the judge wrong? If you're agreeing with the judge is unambiguous, how do you unambiguously read that differently?
I unambiguously read it that it applies strictly to the loss and not to the appraisal award. And because, like I said, even in Paler, I think they make a very, very specific note that it has to be explicitly excluded for the pre-award interest, and this doesn't mention pre-award interest. The loss is different. A payment just on the loss is different than a payment on the appraisal award, and that's the part that I'm really trying to get to, and I understand that might not be striking a chord here, so I would also like to talk about, while I still have a little bit of time left, I would like to talk about 65A01, which sets the requirements for what can be in a policy. And this alleged exclusion is different than what 65A01 has. 65A01 has a loss payment provision, and it says that the loss is payable 60 days after the amount of loss for which this company may be liable shall be payable 60 days after the proof of loss, as herein provided, is received by the company, and ascertainment of the loss is made either by agreement between the insured and this company, expressed in writing, or the filing with this company of an award as herein provided. The point on that is that that has a loss payment provision that's 60 days. State Farm's is 5. So the 5 days offers more benefit because you get it sooner. So the 5 days is okay. But this provision does not allow for an exclusion of pre-award interest. State Farm's policy mirrors a lot of those requirements. It has the requirement that there's either an agreement or an award and that it's due sometime after. This says 60 days, there says 5, but it does not have an exclusion. It does not allow for exclusion of pre-award interest.
Mr. Remick, admit you might have to deal with this in rebuttal, but would you, if you have a copy of the standard fire policy, the language that you just read is followed up by another sentence that specifically addresses liability of the company for interest, right?
Yep.
So I think the standard fire policy does address interest owed by the company. It is definitely a different provision from the one State Farm has, but I think it undercuts your argument that somehow State Farm's policy contradicts or is undercutting the benefits that are provided by the standard fire policy. And like I said, it's up to Judge Sleater.
You feel free to your final comments answering Judge Grapple's question.
Yeah, that provision is an affirmative that says you definitely get interest.
Does not.
Following.
You need to read it. It says the company will not in any case be liable for more than the sum insured with interest thereon from the time when the loss shall become payable. Okay. So the interest for the sum insured from the time the loss will become payable. Again, the 60-day provision. So I'm struggling. I mean, yes, they definitely expanded it by going to 5 days instead of 60, but they made a similar alteration on the interest.
But the making it 5 days instead of 60 is a benefit that
I understand.
The insurer, but cutting out interest is a detriment, and that is not provided for. That's not. They can't provide less benefits than
But the standard fire policy, if you'd read it again and address it in rebuttal, please. I think the standard fire policy does limit interest, and that is discussed in the Paler opinion. I'm not making this up.
I agree.
Okay.
I understand.
Right. Thank you, counsel. And counsel for responding, you may identify yourself, and then you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Scott Williams. I represent the respondent, State Farm Fire and Casualty Company, in this case. If I could just briefly set the stage for where I see this case fitting in with the other ones that were talked about today, I think it'd be helpful to the court to understand exactly what State Farm's position here is. The Elm Creek case that was mentioned by counsel a moment ago was decided last month, and that case in part discussed the calculation of pre-award interest on an appraisal award. Notably, however, there was no dispute in that case that there was a right to obtain pre-award interest because the policy there did not have this endorsement or anything like it. So effectively, the Elm Creek case arose under the law as espoused in the Paler case, which recognized that there is a right to pre-award interest unless there's language in the policy that would otherwise preclude it. So Paler is decided by the Minnesota Supreme Court and recognizes this right to pre-award interest, and it does so in large part based upon the loss payable clause that was in the Cincinnati insurance policy. And that clause was similar to what State Farm's clause used to say as well. So the Cincinnati policy and the State Farm policy are very similar. The distinction and the reason that we're in this case here today and why State Farm did not pay pre-award interest is that when this fire occurred, there had been an endorsement added to Mr. Wesser's policy that specifically said what the district court relied upon here for determining that no interest was owed. And it says, no interest accrues on the loss until after the loss becomes payable. That sentence did not exist in the Cincinnati policy in Paler and did not exist in the Elm Creek case. And so that's really what we're here talking about today and what effect that has on the right to collect pre-award interest. And I would submit to the court that it's a very straightforward contract interpretation. It simply says you cannot get interest on your loss until after the loss becomes payable. Well, when does the loss become payable? It says in the
counsel, before you move on to when the loss becomes payable, I'd like you to back up to that language. Same question I asked of appellant's attorney. What is the meaning of the word the loss?
Well, yeah, I think in this instance, it's the broad claim under which you're submitting your right to insurance benefits.
Where does your policy say that?
Well, I think it says it in general throughout the entire policy.
That's not good enough, counsel. You know that's not how we interpret insurance policies. We're very specific about how we interpret insurance policies, just like contracts. And I don't see an argument in your brief linking it to the language of the policy itself that says it would be the entirety of Mr. Wester's claim.
Well, the term loss is not defined in the policy. I will fully acknowledge that to the court here today. It's not a defined term, so you cannot look at...
So what do we do under the law when a term is not defined in a contract?
Well, you have to read the contract as a whole. And so in this instance, to be able to first have a first-party claim, you have to have a loss. It says that throughout the policy numerous times. We will pay losses to you. We will pay when you submit a claim with a loss.
Right, and as you heard me ask appellant's counsel, I mean, I see a number of definitions of the loss in your policy, one of which is simply the event itself. You talk about coverage for the loss, and you refer to Section 2, I believe it is, and the two types of events are a fire and lightning. So those are certainly one meaning of the word loss. Now, if we try to put that into the language we're interpreting today, we all get pretty stymied, I think. On the other hand, you also have language in several sections of the policy that define loss in two ways, cost of repair and cost of replacement. Now, those are two really different numbers, particularly in this case. They were very different. So is that what is meant by the limiting language that you're relying on?
Well, what I'm relying upon is just simply the fact that to go to an appraisal in the first instance, you have to have a dispute about the amount of loss. You might have a dispute about the actual cash value of the loss. You might have a dispute about the replacement cost value of the loss. You might have some other related dispute about the loss. But you don't even get to an appraisal or any other type of event unless you have a loss. And so I think that's where I would respond to that inquiry about what is the meaning of loss. It's not a defined term under the policy, but I think that's in part intentional, because if you tried to define it as a subpart and say, here's what loss means, you'd effectively be reincorporating the entire policy, because the policy has all different kinds of losses that can be paid. And so, those are set forth in the policy contract.
So, counsel, the language you're relying on is an exclusion. I think you've already referred to it that way, right?
Well,
it's a policy exclusion for pre-award interest. Well, let's just take a second here. So under Paylor, if you didn't have that language, Mr. Wester's entitled to pre-award interest, right?
Right.
Okay, we all know that. So your language that you're relying on today definitely excludes Mr. Wester. I mean, according to you, I'm assuming I agree with you, but that it excludes pre-award interest.
It does exclude pre-award interest.
So it's an exclusion. So it's going there. What are our rules about what we do with exclusions and policies?
Oh, sure. You would construe them narrowly against the insurance company.
That's
right. I have no doubt about that. But I do want to point out, I do not agree that it is an exclusion in the policy contract, because there are defined exclusions. This is defined as an endorsement. This is an add-on to the policy under the loss payable clause.
Absolutely.
And so it's
a very specific type of exclusion. It's an exclusion as to the amount that will be paid under the policy. It is not excluding a particular type of event. You're absolutely correct.
Right, and so I think in common parlance, when I think of what an exclusion is, I'm thinking of something that is revoking coverage entirely. It's effectively saying we will not provide coverage for you if this exclusion is met. Here, this is an endorsement, and it's about a loss payable clause. So really what the loss payable clause is doing is defining when do we owe you money, and in what circumstances do we issue payment. And what the policy says in that regard is, We will pay you that money when we reach an agreement with you, when there's an entry of a final judgment, or when there's a filing of an appraisal award with us. That's what triggers the ability to say to an insurance company, you owe me money. And so what the policy goes on to say with this new endorsement is no interest accrues on the loss until after the loss becomes payable. Now, I'll point out that in the Paylor decision, the Minnesota Supreme Court essentially invited insurers to amend their policies if they did not want to pay pre-award interest.
Well, did the Supreme Court invite insurers to amend their policies, or did they suggest to the insurers that perhaps they want to follow the language in the standard fire policy?
I don't think it's the latter, because if you look at what the Minnesota Supreme Court says, it effectively says because Minnesota Statute 65A01
and MnSTAT 54909 as read together, neither one of them say anything about how an insurance company has to pay pre-award interest. They don't say under this circumstance in pre-award interest accrues on this date or on that date. And again, you can go back to even, you know, any other case law that has, you know, developed since Paylor, and no one has suggested that an insurance company is unable to amend the policy, and if they do, that they'd be in violation of statutory rights.
And I'm not suggesting that. You heard me in my question to counsel that I read the standard fire policy as actually authorizing an insurance company through the standard policy to limit their liability for interest.
Right. And so I think effectively—
Is that your interpretation?
It is.
Standard fire policy?
It is.
Okay.
Because, and that's why, I mean, the court may disagree with my terminology in terms of inviting insurance carriers to make these amendments, but that's how I read it. I mean, the court effectively said, you know, if you have the right to contract freely with an insured about accrual of interest, and in this instance, that's what State Farm did. It identified when interest accrues on the loss, and it indicates that no interest accrues until after the loss becomes payable.
And again, my question about ambiguity in this policy isn't about the loss payable provision as to when it becomes payable or if the no interest portion is effective. What, you know, what does that math add up to? How is it computed? It is strictly on whether the language itself, no interest accrues on the loss, is that ambiguous or isn't it? Now, the appellant's counsel argues forcefully that the loss is different from the appraisal award. The appraisal award is much narrower. The loss could be understandable if it had been defined by State Farm, but it's not defined by State Farm in the policy. And so we're going to construe that narrowly against State Farm. So explain to me where my reasoning is faulty.
Sure. Well, again, if you know, I would argue, again, it's not ambiguous, and I think both myself and Mr. Remick agree on that. So the question becomes, you know, when does interest accrue? Well, no interest accrues on the loss. And so to me, again, you have to think of it in the context of why are we going to appraisal in the first place? Well, it's because we have a dispute about the amount of loss. And effectively, what I hear from opposing counsel in Mr. Wester's position is that, well, State Farm could have chose some other language that they think would have been better or clearer. But my opposition to that is, one, that doesn't make it ambiguous. It's not ambiguous. We've all agreed on that.
So, counsel, just to be clear, I don't agree with that. I thought my questions were pretty clear that I see several definitions of the loss in your policy. And so far, you haven't persuaded me otherwise. So you might want to entertain that and argue why, even under an ambiguous policy, you would prevail.
Well, because again, I just go back to the central construct of the policy itself. If you have a loss, you can make a claim against an insurance company. If you have a dispute about the amount of loss, you can go to an appraisal. That is what the appraisal panel is going to decide. When you have that loss and you have a dispute about the amount of loss, you can look at this policy and determine, when will I get interest? No interest will accrue on the loss until after the loss becomes payable. I don't know how to read it any other way. I mean, to me, that does answer your question if you're looking at this.
Point of an analysis of a policy, you know, saying is this ambiguous or isn't it, isn't to interpret it one way. It's to say, can it be interpreted in more than one way?
Sure.
Is there more than one reasonable meaning to the phrase the loss?
No.
All right?
I
hear you saying there, no, but you've agreed with me that your policy actually defines the loss in at least three different ways. One is as the peril itself, two is as the repair cost, and three is as the replacement cost. You've already agreed with me on that. Those are three reasonable meanings to the phrase the loss.
But where I don't know that I have agreed is I don't think it's defined. I'm saying it's an undefined term, that the term loss is not defined. But saying that it's replacement cost benefit or actual cash value, that's talking about what you're owed when there has been a loss. I think the losses are defined in the first part of the policy when it describes what you will get coverage for. As the court noted before, it could be all different kinds of perils. There could be fire, there could be wind, there could be hail. So what I would argue in terms of rebutting Mr. Remick's argument on this is effectively then what Mr. Remick is saying is it should say no interest accrues on your peril of fire, on your peril of wind, on your peril of hail, on your peril of, I mean, you would have to go through that entire listing again to be able to somehow then say that it encapsulates everything that could possibly be encapsulated by the policy, which I think is counterproductive because effectively then you're taking this one sentence and turning it into multi-page analysis.
You know, I have to be honest with you, counsel. I don't see that argument in your brief that the loss is the peril, all right? Just assuming for the moment that that's what it is, how does that even make sense? How can you compute interest on the fire? It's not on the fire. It's at in some way, it's got to be the amount of the loss that is payable under the policy, right?
Well, sure. I mean, you're not going to be getting interest or any kind of payment on something that's not covered. You have to have a covered loss.
No, I'm not focused on covered loss. How would anyone compute interest on the loss if the loss is defined as a fire? You'd have to determine what damages were caused by the fire, right? Or what is the replacement cost of rebuilding after a fire?
Sure.
Right? And that's what your policy implies.
Absolutely.
Those are two different ways of defining what the loss is.
Absolutely. But that's why, again, we are rebutting the argument or the suggestion that by simply saying it's something that has to do with a loss is insufficient. Because the argument that we're proposing and making is that it defines when interest begins to accrue. If you don't have that loss, you don't have an interest claim. And what you know I hear from the opposing argument on this is effectively, well, the policy could have been written in another way, or it could have said, you know, this under these circumstances, you could or could not collect pre-award interest. And the point that we're just simply making is that, you know, if you are going to have a loss, you don't get interest on it until after the loss becomes payable. Now, again, I don't know how else you can further delineate what that means in that sentence without turning it into a sentence that encapsulates every other kind of listed peril in the policy. I agree it has to be an amount, because ultimately you have to have an amount to have interest accrue upon it. But that goes to my point too, which is that in the district court, Mr. Wester was arguing, here's how you should calculate interest. You should do it by calculating it off of the amount of the loss. Well, if you're going to calculate interest off of the amount of loss, clearly Mr. Wester is recognizing that he has an amount of loss, he has a dispute about the amount of loss, and he wants to go to appraisal on it. And so with all those things in play, I think it clearly answers the question as to when interest accrues by saying no interest accrues on loss until after the loss becomes payable. So I do think that sentence does resolve all of those potential disputes that are existing. How else would you calculate any kind of interest, like was done in the Elm Creek case? How would you calculate interest owed whatsoever if you haven't first defined that you have a loss and that there's a dispute about the amount of loss that went to appraisal? So I think in a sense, you know, opposing counsel is trying to have it both ways by saying, well, you know, it doesn't, saying that it's on the loss isn't sufficient. On the other hand, when we go to the district court and ask for interest to be identified and calculated, we're going to calculate it off the loss. That's the
so
only
one,
thing.
One
that
final question off. For you, counsel. When the appraisal award came out, there were two numbers to measure this loss.
Yes.
Yeah. There were, weren't there? One was a repair, cost of repair, and one was replacement.
Absolutely.
And they're quite different. Okay.
Yep, different numbers.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the final point I just want to make on that, and this is why
If you want to conclude, your time did expire.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Now you can finish your thought if you
okay.
wanted to.
I just want to point out the other point is just that, you know, in our briefing, we were careful to note that, in our view, this certainly prohibits the recovery of pre-award interest, but it doesn't mean that there would never be circumstances where interest could not be collected. Because, for example, if there is a filing of an appraisal award and State Farm doesn't pay what is owed, and if there's a dispute about coverage, for example, which sometimes can happen because an appraisal panel cannot decide coverage, there's certain situations where an insured could collect that post-appraisal award interest if the insurance company doesn't pay what is owed based on the award. I think this clearly prohibits the recovery of pre-award interest, could leave open the possibility of post-award interest if the insurance company doesn't pay within the 5 days as required. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. And Mr. Remick, you'll have 5 minutes for a rebuttal if you wish.
Thank you. So I first wanted to touch on some of this, and then I will come back to the statutory argument, but we've both argued that the provision is clear and unambiguous, but we've argued it in completely different directions. So I think the court's point is well taken that it's not as clear as either of us would have it believed to be in our favor.
It's usually a sign that this court looks at, you know, when the counsel come up and they tell us that the phrase is unambiguous, but you two have exactly different meanings to the phrase. I mean, it's an indication, isn't it, counsel?
For sure. Yeah. Understood.
So has that persuaded you during the course of the argument? Have you changed your position?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll say that, you know, since we both believe it's clear in our opposite directions, I think that it obviously leaves room for ambiguity there. You know, counsel makes the argument that in order to define interest on the loss, you would have to define loss in so many different ways, but that's not necessary for what they're trying to do. If State Farm is trying to exclude pre-award interest, they can simply say they do not pay pre-award interest. It doesn't need to be this five-page essay.
Well, I think State Farm makes a compelling argument that they shouldn't be obligated to name every type of interest that they're not obligated to pay. I mean, if they had included the language pre-award interest, what would it do for the other scenarios that are outlined for loss payability? So, because you could have agreed, right? You could have agreed on the amount of the loss, and then would that have also somehow triggered an interest award, or litigation could have occurred, right? And then would that have triggered? I think State Farm makes a reasonable argument that they were trying to encompass it in a broad way, and that's why they use the term the loss.
Yeah, but I just think they don't get the benefit of the doubt when they haven't been specific enough to exclude something that is normally in there. So 54909 has a specific set of things for pre-award and pre-judgment, and then another set of circumstances for post. They are two separate things in two different areas of that same statute.
So, Mr. Remick, you're advising Mr. Williams to advise State Farm to revise that sentence. What wording do you recommend that he tell them they should include?
I recommend them to be exactly clear as to what they're doing. If they want to exclude interest on those loss payments, as we discussed earlier, this sentence does just fine. If they want to exclude interest on a pre-award interest on an appraisal award pre or post, they can use those words and
so
say
State between Farm, loss and until, if it would have said no interest accrues on the loss or appraisal and or appraisal award and or an agreement after the loss becomes payable, then your client would have been excluded if they had included those.
That certainly would have been more clear, and I think my client could have then actually read it and understood what that meant, that he's not going to get an interest on an appraisal award. Right now, he has to guess along with, you know, the entire court system here, and as, you know, counsel and I argue over the meaning of what this is, I think it's very hard for a policyholder to understand that this would exclude pre-award interest. And so it just needs to be more clear. But on top of that, I do still think that 65A.01 would also preclude them from excluding this interest. I did go back and reread that second sentence in there. Is moreover understood that there can be no abandonment of property insured to the company, and that the company will not in any case be liable for more than the sum insured with interest thereon from the time when the loss shall become payable as above provided. I believe that that's affirmative that the insurance company will not be liable, and they're talking about the policy limit, I do believe. They're not be liable for more than the amount of loss insured plus interest, post-award interest. It is not specific to say that you must allow for pre-award interest, but I think written exactly as that is, there is pre-award interest. So in order to not pay pre-award interest, State Farm must change its policy to exclude something that this standard fire policy does not exclude. And that's where I analogize that to the case of Watson, where the standard fire policy does not specifically prohibit insureds from excluding an innocent spouse. That's the case where if one person lights their house on fire, they're excluded because their intentional acts cause the loss, so they don't get paid any money. But if they co-own that house with their spouse, the spouse still gets 50% of the value of the property. And so at some point, that insurer in that case decided that, well, they would exclude that. They would say, nope, if either party burns the house down, they're both excluded. And the court went through an analysis to say, well, 65A01 does not specifically say that you cannot exclude the innocent spouse, but based on the language in there, and that 65A01 has other terms that say essentially that are specific to the individual, you know, when the insured, and uses the insured quite often, so that they cannot exclude all insureds for the act of one insured. I think that that's analogous here, where 65A01 says, here's a loss payment provision, this is what it should be, and 65A01 does not provide the opportunity to exclude pre-award interest.
Your time did expire. Thank you, counsel. We appreciate both counsel. What is unambiguous is our panel's appreciation for your answers to our questions today involving this issue. We now take the matter under advisement. Feel free to take your souvenir microphone cover with it. Okay.
Court be offended if I just threw it away?
No, I would not at all. We somewhat expect that. A wise choice.